Say hi, how are you?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the city council meeting for the city of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, October the 3rd, 2017. I currently have 7:01 PM. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight, we're going to have our pledge given by one of our scouts, Nick Watka. And so Nick, you wouldn't mind coming forward and leading us in the pledge, I'd appreciate it.
We stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Nick, excellent job. Our invocation tonight will be given by Councilmember Adams.
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful for this evening that we can come together as a city council to discuss important issues that affect this city. Grateful for those in attendance and pray that you'll be able to have clear minds and intellect to be able to make wise choices. Grateful for this free country in which we live, that we're able to gather and be of use in our city. We are grateful for our neighbors and friends that live here and ask that thy justice bless and be upon them in the name of Jesus Christ.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on, we have an approval of the meeting agenda. I don't know of any adjustments that need to be made. If someone likes to make a motion on the agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the agenda as it is.
Okay, on the motion, is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous, thank you very much. Didn't see anyone had signed in for public comments. And so unless someone wants to raise their hand right now, then I will close public comments and move on to the consent agenda. On the consent agenda, there is the appointment of Vic White. Did not see Vic tonight. Steve Mastin, who I do see, Steve's wife Sue Mastin, and all three of them are to be appointed to the Beautification Recreation Parks and Trails Citizen Advisory Committee. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
Does it matter that only Vic is noticed on the agenda?
No, actually, the agenda got posted on Monday. So the one in your Dropbox only has Vic, but the one that actually got posted everywhere has the other names.
Okay. Then I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion to approve, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion's been seconded, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Consent agenda was approved. Moving on to city reports of business, start with Mr. Goodwin and go down the row.
Yeah. A few items, our ski bus registration is now open. It's a program that annually fills up. We've filled up multiple buses in the past, we hope to do so again this year. So if you know anybody that's an avid skier or wants to learn, this is a great program where they go up to Snowbird. Encourage them to sign up while there's openings. We held our last tournament of the year for the Lone Peak baseball team today. We had a total of 9 tournaments in September, and I believe there's still the ones upstairs. The course greens were aerated, so they're spike aerated this year, which is a little different method than we've used in the past, and I think it went well, right, Greg? Give me a thumbs up. Tot soccer wrapped up last week, and K-2 second grade soccer finishes up next Saturday. The flag football season's wrapping up by next week, with the tournament for 7th to 12th graders that will be going throughout the month. Also, the voter information pamphlet is on the website for the upcoming election. It includes the for and against arguments for the park tax, as well as the rebuttals. Paper copies will be sent out to residents later this month. The deadline is October 23rd. And finally, I just wanted to make you aware that for anybody that's been in the office and has dealt with Mike Carson at the front desk, he won the Service is Beautiful Award that is given by the group Seamless.gov. So we're congratulating Mike for his efforts on serving the community here in Cedar Hills.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Goodwin. Mrs. Reese, anything?
Yes. So just on communication, so it's that time of the year when I generally start to work on putting the state of the city together. And so I wanted to have a conversation with council on topics that you would like in it. And then also, I got some feedback today as I'm working with Diana Waite that there was a desire for us to have the State of the City out within or before the election. And I just need to let the council know that I don't personally have time to get it done that quickly. In 2015, I put it out in November, and I know Daniel just put out one 6 months ago. And so unless you guys see an urgent need, I would like to still keep it in November, which gives me time to draft the information. It usually takes the graphic designer about 3 weeks or so to design it, and as we go back and forth with editing and then get it published. And so I'm planning on November. And then the topics I have right now are the mayor and city manager message, the budget, a brief introduction into property taxes, talking about some of the concept plans for Harvey Park now that we purchased that land, but trying to condense it and keep it small so we're not just repeating the same stuff over and over every year. So I'd like some insight and thoughts from the council on timelines and just things that should be completed besides those four, or sorry, those five topics.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
Well, council, do you have any insight on those two topics?
Do you want to get that information offline, or do you want that now?
If I can get some of it now, that'd be great. And if there's more thoughts coming later, I'm happy to receive them via email.
So I just went in. I like those 4 points. I really like the park idea. And maybe we should have some discussion here about how do we finance it, you know, as well as just the concepts. And I'd like to see that. Because I think if we want it done in my lifetime, we probably need to find a funding mechanism that is fair for all. And that's what I'd like to see.
Totally agree. So I would like the continuation of how the tax dollars are spent and the breakdown of property taxes and how the dollar, I think that should happen every year. That's the whole purpose of the state of the city.
Yeah, not those two.
I would prefer sooner than later, but I'll just say as soon as it can be done, let's get it out. If that's before the election, great. I would rather have it that, but if that's not possible, then it's not possible. I just want it sooner than later.
Okay.
Mr. Baker.
I like everything. Good.
Mrs. Anderson, any thoughts?
So did you mention, I didn't hear you mention anything, can we give the citizens an update on the commercial zone, about what's happening there and what planning, you know, anyone's committed to build there? Is that a possibility?
I don't think until it's finalized. David Shaw?
We have not closed on that property. Okay. Yes.
So maybe give them that update. Say we're working on closing or something. I have people ask me all the time what's happening in the commercial zone.
So that's under contract. That's all you can say.
Really. Yeah. And that's, I guess, what we're doing again.
I mean, we shouldn't be saying, oh, we're purchasing this or we're purchasing that. We don't know.
Yeah. And maybe that can be part of either the mayor or city manager message, just that one sentence. You know, we're under conversation. If we can even say that, I don't know, Dave, you can tell us what you think.
Mr. Chapala, any thoughts?
When we had the resident meeting about Canyon Road, I had a number of people tell me that's really helpful in terms of information that we as members of the council were able to give them. And so a brief history of where that has come from, where we are now, and the fact that there is a resident group out there who would like to do more in terms of safety, that they can go and be involved there if they're interested in those issues. I think a summary of that would be useful.
Okay.
I'll get working on it.
All right, Mrs. Reese, anything else?
No.
Mr. Getz?
I have nothing to report.
Okay. At the last Lone Peak Public Safety meeting, we had the draft report from the state auditor. There's a few issues that I pushed back on, and I think we're going to try and get it cleaned up. So I think there were some inaccuracies there. So other than that, that was that it. Mr. Bailey? Mrs. Anderson?
Okay.
Mr. Zappala?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is I had a request from a resident to look into banning open fires during the open air process. I spoke with the Department of Environmental Quality, and they said it's purely up to us, the city, as to whether we would allow issuing of permits during the different season, which occurs September, November, and then there's a period in March as well. The issue that the resident brought to my attention was that we're a heavily suburban area, and so the neighbor had been got the burn permit and was doing it over in their backyard, and the wind was just blowing the smoke straight into their backyard and even into their house, so they had to keep all their windows closed for 2 or 3 days straight, weren't able to use their backyard. It just seemed like this, allowing that kind of activity inside a densely populated urban area means you're invariably going to be a bad neighbor. It also makes our air quality really bad. So I would like the council to consider on one of our future meetings just saying to the best no longer going to be allowed in those months, hoping to issue our permits. And the Department of Environmental Quality will know that on their website.
We're happy to have that discussion.
Yeah, I would love to have the council weigh on that. Maybe I'm alone, but I'd like to hear.
Before the council weighs in on that.
No, I mean not now, but in the future meeting.
No, there's a point here, which is that before the council should weigh in on that, even though we're looking for a full-time fire chief, we have a fire marshal who's Chief Bailey, and he still has responsibility to give recommendations for things like that. So council should listen to the fire marshal in terms of whatever his recommendation is and incorporate that into anything that they want to do. We don't have to do that tonight. In fact, that's not scheduled to do tonight. I'm just saying as a procedure, that's probably the first step. All right.
Yeah, so the other thing that I have is I would also, as I mentioned earlier in work session, I would love for the council to have an agenda item for planning commission, veto the planning commission, to discuss whether St. Andrews should be rezoned as both facilities, whether that should be part of our long-term plan.
Thank you. Let's move on now to schedule items. First is an action item on the amendment to the City Code Title 3, Chapter 1, relating to solicitation. Mr. Goodwin.
What we're proposing, based on the previous discussion that we had in August, I believe, was a simple modification to our no solicitation notice ordinance and the duties of solicitors ordinance. We found that in looking at what other cities are doing, our duties of solicitors outlines what solicitors can and can't do in terms of soliciting throughout the city. I found that ours are in line with surrounding area in general. They're very much repaved, so it must have gone around 1 year and everyone adopted it. So what we're proposing is, rather than an outright ban of putting any sort of information on door hangers, but to limit that to anyone with no solicitation sign. So if you have a no solicitation sign, you can't be contacted in any way. Currently it reads that this is in 3-1D-10. It says that it is a violation of this article for any person soliciting or advocating to knock on the door, ring the doorbell, leave any advertisements, door hangers, material, or literature. And that's the new language right there. Leave any advertisements, door hangers, material, or literature at the residence or in any other manner. So this is what it currently says, is or in any other manner attempt to attract the attention of an occupant of a residence if there is no solicitation sign. We could extrapolate, I feel like, that language that says or in any other manner as being all-encompassing, including reading literature at people's homes, but this language specifically calls out leaving any sort of literature at the home and prohibits anyone with a no solicitation sign for that occurring. This way, I still think it respects the rights of solicitors to solicit throughout the community, but also respects the property rights that wish to not be bothered in this manner. The city cannot place an outright ban on solicitors. I've heard that bannered around. We just can't do that. So the city, we encourage the residents to inform us of when there's bad behavior by solicitors. I get solicitors in my home, but if they're aggressive, if they are trespassing anyway, or if they're making you uncomfortable, call the city, call the police. The city can encourage residents to report, and I think that there's ways that we can do that through newsletter article, maybe even a state city article. This is stuff that is residents just need to know about what their responsibility is to inform the city. Also, the penalties, I believe, are just either no trespassing violation or a violation of city's nuisance ordinance. So there could be penalties, but the city, like I said, has to be informed by the residents about which solicitor came to their house. So that's kind of where we are with the code. I would entertain questions, comments, modifications, any sort of feedback.
So there has been a lively conversation on Facebook about this, as you know. And one of the things that I've heard people say is we have solicitors coming through and they just ignore the no solicitation sign because there really is no bite to our ordinance. There is no penalty. So if you do it, nothing happens if you just ignore the sign. And so the question that's been raised a few times is, can the city impose a fine on someone who violates the non-solicitation ordinance, or what can the city do in order to actually enforce it?
That's what I was saying, is I believe that if you get repeated claims, then it has to be reported.
Right, so if they report to the city.
Somebody has to report to the city. And I think that the city can pursue some sort of violation of their nuisance ordinance or trespassing.
Okay, and can that be done?
But we have to know who the solicitor is, who they represent, and we do reach out to the companies and tell them that their solicitors are in violation of our ordinance.
And can that be done with an actual financial penalty? I mean, something to make them say, we're going to really follow this ordinance?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Shaw.
By default, a violation of the city's ordinance is a Class B.
Okay.
And so it can be charged as that, as a violation of the solicitation provision per se, as a class member. But again, the trick is in finding who they are and who they represent and so on.
Does the penalty line stated in city code or?
The default penalty ordinance.
Which is what? What is the?
It's a class B.
It's a ticket.
It's a $1,000 fine.
It's a $1,000 fine. So in that case, they would really need to contact American Fork Police, because they're the only ones who can issue a citation.
So American Fork PD would be the ones that issue the citation. The city would need to be contacted, because we want to contact the mother company. So usually, one company comes in, applies for 10 solicitation licenses, and we go through the background checks. And we need to notify the company of, hey, your solicitors are violating our ordinance. And that carries a penalty. We can be very strict with it, but like I said, it is.
And if it's overly egregious over and over and over, the class B misdemeanor also carries over.
Okay. Because that's been another complaint that I've heard too, is that they'll say, I have no soliciting sign, please leave, and that they get very aggressive sometimes, and they want to insist, you know, well, why aren't you interested? And they just get, you know, very aggressive, and that's concerning.
So we direct residents to call police, but we don't have a Moondot 911. I think we don't want a Moondot 911.
There's a
We can put that in the newsletter, on the website, and Facebook, and let people know the process.
I have a question about advocating. Soliciting or advocating. So are we talking about every single thing you put on the school, whether it's for the Hill Project or the primary program? What is that?
In my view, this is only limited to commercial businesses. We don't require solicitation licenses. Does Long Peak do a little coupon card football team for fundraisers?
Right.
We don't require solicitation for that fundraising.
Okay. You can't
pay? Can't pay, no.
Just so you know, I mean, I'm sure everybody can go to their phone and Google. If you do AB Police, the number is 763-3020. There it is. I mean, don't call 911. That's the worst thing.
We can publish that non-emergency line in the newsletter.
Yeah, but I mean, if a resident has an issue and it's someone won't get off your doorstep, pull out your phone and say, I'm calling the police right now.
Why do we have the Legion that says soliciting? Why not just say soliciting?
Soliciting or soliciting?
Advocating. That seems pretty darn close to the First Amendment.
That's existing language.
Yeah, I know.
But it's all three strike weapons. Feel free to strike it because I agree with that. Just my personal opinion. I get D, first line of D.
Is that illegal? Is there a, why would that be in there?
It's the just same language as Drevo.
That's why I say.
I mean, just because everybody does it, it's English.
My guess is it was got bad.
Some attorney wrote it.
Someone wrote it and everyone liked it and we just all adopted it.
And then, as far as the new language that's been added, I like it. I understand Mr. Irwin's concern and the other residents have, which is they may be gone for extended periods of time. It places a notice on their door, basically, that nobody's home. And as much as we like to believe that we live in this safe community where nothing bad, there is no crime, we don't. I mean, I talked to a few of you today that you can see my neighborhood watch signs in the back. My neighborhood's having a serious crime problem right now. We're having, you know, a lot of thefts and break-ins and vehicles being stolen, and that's a problem. So I understand residents saying, I want the city to help me do what we can to protect my property and my home, and I support that effort. And so I think if, you know, adding this one sentence saying you can't solicit or leave literature on a a house that has a no soliciting sign, I think that makes sense.
So yes, I know we've talked in the past, some people being comments that you were litigating here. Litigation is always a balance.
Legislation,
excuse me, is always a balance. And, you know, in this case, it's kind of interesting. We're advocating for private property rights by making this kind of legislation. I feel like if I put a sign on my door that I don't want to solicit, it's my private property that I should be able to have that ability to keep them away. I'm not stopping anybody else from having a solution. Welcome to their house. They put a nice big sign. Please come sell me stuff. But it seems like I should be able to protect my property and put that sign and then enforce it.
And to that point, I think that's why you're trying to relate it to just people that have the no solicitation sign on. Literally showing that they don't want it. They don't understand what you're doing.
So my thoughts really have to change. I'm a big fan of Keith. I'm just not a big fan of this. Because I just don't think it solves anything. A lot of solicitors, ignore the no solicitation sign anyways. And so the language that we added is not objectionable. I just wonder what problem that we're trying to solve. I'm not sure that there's a problem.
The problem is someone visiting my door is it's hard for me to approve the authorized it. They leave literature on my door. Oh, I know exactly who they're now. Now I have evidence. And so if the law now states that that's not allowed, I have evidence that they committed a crime and I can call the police and I can show the evidence.
So you really want the American public police chasing down people that left at a door hanger on your door?
Yeah, they're violating the law. I want them to stop.
Okay.
But I think more importantly,
maybe we'll finally get some teeth or no soliciting ordinance. People will stop coming and not giving the door right, but they don't want them.
And I think a first step before even necessarily needing to contact the police is contacting the city so we can call whoever left the flyer to say, hey, but they did our ordinance just so you know. And so it's a lot of education.
I agree with that.
So I think I'm probably in the minority here, but I always think about things like, is what we're doing here going to be effective? Really question whether that is going to be effective or whether people that are out soliciting are going to ignore the no solicitation sign like they already do. And I've always thought the best solution is go to your neighbor who you like and say, can you pick up whatever's on my door every 2 days? So I think that's the best solution.
I do agree that we're likely to get the best action on this if we organize residents to call the company's directly and complain. And if we had, and I've heard the lots of people say they would more in my no solicitation sign, great, let's get 20 of us all together and call the company and tell them what's happening. Tell them we're really mad at you. We're not going to buy anything from you. We'll spread the word. And they may talk to their system.
So I'll just weigh in quickly. I agree with pretty much with what everyone said. I even agree with the mayor. But the fact that we do have an ordinance, and we're just trying to clarify it a little bit, I think this is good. It's an effort to do something, and I still think it's up to our neighbors and everyone to look out for each other. But I personally don't have a no solicitation. I shouldn't say that publicly, but I don't care if people come to my door. So, Anyway, whatever. I understand people's rights.
So, question before, sorry. So when the companies come to register for their little, their badges, whatever, is that when they're notified?
Yeah.
That you can't hang
banners on? Yeah. And I would encourage our business licensing staff to reach out to the solicitation companies and inform them of the change so they can let their solicitors know. And inform them that we will be
okay, so I'd like to
make a motion. I move that we approve ordinance number 10-3-2017A, amending this City of Cedar Hills Municipal Code Title 3, Section 1, Article D, relating to solicitation with the wording changes that were discussed, including the removal of the word advocating Section 3-1D-10.
There's actually two places. Oh. The next paragraph in D, where it says are attempted to engage in advocating. So there's two paragraphs. Or it's in the same paragraph about
that. So both uses of the word advocating.
Okay, I have a motion.
Yeah.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Cipolla seconds it. Let's have a vote. Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Let's move on to item number 8, which is also an action item. This is the adoption of the no-fault insurance policy for the City of Cedar Hills. Mr. Goodwin, continue.
Yeah, the result, this is the end result of a line break that occurred on Morgan back in May. As you recall, there were a number of homes before that were flooded in the city of Cedar Hills, paying out above Lubeco. Four homes were flooded. The city's insurance denied any liability on the city's part because the city does do a proper job of maintaining their lines. And the homeowner's insurance as well, in these cases, that denied homeowners' claims with the water and getting from outside the home. Now, in an effort to reduce the city's liability on these types of claims, because they can, this is a rather small scale compared to what some other cities have experienced. And so, in an effort to kind of get a control on this, the city proposing to adopt a policy that if the no fault culinary water, sanitary sewer, stormwater, sewer, program. I'm going to go through, I'm going to walk through this with you so you understand it. I'm going to read the first paragraph. So the purpose of this program is to assist in cleanup of real and personal property and or compensate any persons for the loss of real or personal property destroyed or damaged as a result of the fact that the city culinary water, sanitary sewer, or stormwater sewer facilities regardless of fault within the restrictions, limitations, and provisions of this policy. So it sets the parameters for decision making. And then A, B, C, D, E, and F there. It lays out the procedure on how the reimbursement or how any sort of payment would have to go about. In A, the cleanup would have to be in accordance with the city's standard procurement procedure. In some instances, it's just kind of been the first person on the job, got all the work, and you know, we may not know that they're getting the best deal here. We may not know. We may be getting taken advantage of, quite frankly. It's hard to tell when it's an emergency, you just want to get the mess cleaned up. In C, the city may contact a cleanup contractor or a contractor with the city pursuant to subsection A above. And D, it says in the event that the property owner engages the services of a cleanup contractor prior to notifying the city of the event, the city may reimburse the property owner for actual expenses incurred by the property owner, but only up to the amount the city would have paid its own cleanup contractor under subsection C above. So we're starting to set some limitations and some guidelines on the city and on the residents what they need to be doing. And finally, in F, it says in no event will the city pay or reimburse the property owner for the payment of special or consequential damages. When we ask residents for a list of damages, we got some pretty creative items.
Personal properties.
Well, added electricity for fans they had to plug in. So I feel like this kind of sets some parameters on what can be claimed. In the next section, application time limitations, it's within 30 days after the event, occurrence of the event. And in the next section qualification for assistance, it's after due inquiry or investigation, the city makes an affirmative determination that the event was the result of the failure of a city facility. So the city takes on some responsibility for investigating these claims. And then in subsection A there, it excludes a number of items. So we're in an earthquake zone. Every emergency preparedness fair that we have has talked about earthquakes. In the event of an earthquake, a massive earthquake here, the city could have major water breaks and have flooding occur throughout the city. In that case, the city is under no financial, it has no financial capability to reimburse every home. It's just not feasible. So this is like a typical insurance policy where it excludes sabotage, drought, civil disturbance, floods, washouts, acts of God, earthquakes, lightning, etc. The loss, it excludes, also excludes if the loss is caused by either an act of omission of the property owner, the property owner's agent, or a member of the property owner's family or business. So the property owner cannot cause the problem themselves. And C, the property owner failed to file a claim rather in a timely manner or failed to comply with any of the procedural requirements of the city. It goes back to the timeliness of the claim. And indeed, the loss is the result of intentional or negligent acts of third parties. So if you contract with a company to do some work on your house and the contractor is negligent in their work, the city is not liable in this case. And then E, the loss is wholly covered by private insurance. So if you're covered by insurance, you're not subject again to a bill of payment from the city. And then maximum payments. In the next section, it says maximum payments. It's limited to $25,000 per incident and then $5,000 per application or litigation. So in this case, we had one incident, Morgan Line Break, for four applications that would be treated in that case.
So if you had an incident that affected 100 people, you're still only limited to 25 on that.
Yeah, that actually happened down in Salem a few months ago. They have a canal that runs through the city and they broke both things. And my understanding is that it's about 100 homes.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And the city is not under, it does not have the financial capabilities to reimburse these homeowners in this case.
That was a rainstorm, it was an act of God.
It was an act of God. There's nothing the city could have done. It reached capacity and then beyond. In this case, with the policy here, we're enabling staff, we're giving direction to staff to handle these claims. So these claims wouldn't come to the city council. There would be a budget established, and it wouldn't be established until next year's budget. But the budget would be established in next year's budget that would allow staff to process these claims on per incident and per application basis. Anything beyond that point would need to be authorized by the city council. So in some instances, when they happen, we may be coming to the city council saying, here's the situation, here's the circumstances. We need your guidance on this. But this does authorize staff to handle these claims. And then finally, and this is the only change I want to propose to this, is that it says payment does not imply liability. Let me read this. It says any assistance or payment made under this policy shall not be construed as and does not imply an admission of negligence or responsibility on the part of the city for any damage or loss. Any assistance or payment made under this policy is strictly voluntary on the part of the city. I want language added to that anyone receiving payments must sign a whole harmless agreement with the city, and that is a requirement. And then finally, this isn't part of the policy, but I think it's good practice on the city's end, is that we need to inform residents. We need to do a better job of informing residents of possible liability that they may face. So they need to go contact their homeowner's insurance and find out what prior, if any, they have. Get the proper insurance. As well as, so I think that there's notices that we can put in possibly the state of the city, the newsletter, and the weekly update, and do a good job of educating the residents. As well as when putting together a pamphlet that when people sign up for utilities, they're informed of potential liabilities they may face in the event of a utility failure. I think that's it. That's the policy. For questions, if any of you have.
Go ahead,
Where will this be published for residents to see?
It'll be internally, but we can publish it on the website. Say,
maybe that's not the first.
It's not an ordinance.
Yeah, but I mean, just a policy that they know what to do. Like they know not to, but they need to contact the city before they.
And we can put it on the website, so the whole policy is right there for their benefit.
We talked about adding it to our emergency preparedness barriers.
Yeah.
Food around.
Right.
I wanted to add it as a matter of discussion. You have 200-300 people in the room to talk and to listen. I think it's an appropriate time to talk about what happens after the insurance company incident that you're not covering.
But I like having it on the website, so if we have something like Morgan happen, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, as you're going out and talking to these residents, you can say, we do have a policy for how to deal with this, please reference this page on our website that provides the policy on the steps that you need to take.
Services, and then it goes to insurance.
Right,
or
right.
So I just put my legal hat on for a minute. The first sentence of that, a no fault culinary water. We also have pressurized irrigation. I think they actually kind of broke Morgan was at the island. If I'm right.
So we can add in.
I mean, I if a legal person were to read that. Would
what,
that
would happen,
the
what would happen if we just struck out the word culinary and just left the word water?
Since there's some resistance, I would recommend putting both. That's pretty mild.
The culinary implies, you know, creative.
No, I would recommend putting both.
Okay.
Ken, the question I have is, how are we proposing to fund this? Is this just coming out of the general fund?
It would be funds established, no, not the general fund, it would be in the water service fund.
So we'd be covering basically your water and sewer.
Through the utilities.
Yeah. Are we going to add an additional fee on the utilities to help cover this?
To be determined. I don't know.
Because I'm looking at.
I don't know.
I was curious whether any of you have done this, and I noticed that in Minnesota, they do have provisions for this in the one area of Minnesota. And what they have $10,000 limits is quite high. They have $1.79 rate, which I assume is a per month rate. I don't know the bill, everyone covered that. We have to talk to somebody who's good at insurance to figure out what's the right rate, give them possibly a loss. I mean, we're basically putting ourselves into the insurance business.
You basically are.
And no. We'd be well to talk to an insurance underwriter to check whether we're estimating our liability properly, whether we have.
Well, that's why we've worked with the Childs from Olympus Insurance.
We've already done that
on this. So they've been heavily involved in this project. Now, to your point, if it's not funded by an increase in some sort of increase in utility rates, it would have to be funded by a decrease in some other service.
Right.
So that's a budgetary discussion to be had. I don't know the answer yet. I know if I can correct.
And then the question is, do we want to give that business, or should we instead do a really good education campaign to help people? Our airlines make great, no call of our own, you're not going to be covered. Here's some companies you can get in touch with, get your own coverage. And the question is, would that be cheaper for them? You know, is that going to be $1.79 a month, or is that going to be $50 a month? I'd like to know. If we can do it at that much cheaper, maybe there's a reason for us to go into the insurance business. But if it's a wash, I don't see why we would run it instead of the private.
In that case, you're agreeing to no future payouts.
So, to piggyback on that just a little bit, what about the idea of informing the residents, saying, hey, XYZ can happen, whatever it is, instead of the $5,000 or $25,000 for a resident, $5,000 for a maybe the city can say, you know what, we understand that the insurance cost is going to increase, but if you have a higher deductible, then the cost comes way down. So maybe we make that, we'll help you with $2,500 in your deductible if you have insurance. And if not, maybe we drop that 5,000 in half or even lower and encourage our residents, say, we'll help out.
Floor or ceiling, it's what, the ceiling.
I know, but we don't want to take on, I mean, I understand, and I really was sympathetic with the four families that came in and whatnot, but now that we've gone through this, we don't want to go through it again.
From this we have gone.
Yeah.
So here's
what always happens,
which is that Jen, you're 100% right, and I've been advocating since then.
Can we put that in the minutes, please, verbatim?
What's that?
Can you put that in the minutes verbatim that Gary said that I was right?
I'm 100% right. You know, I have agreed with you many times. And then disagreed with you many times, too. We are getting into the insurance business. There's lots of companies that self-insure. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Because if this council's life is indicative of similar councils in the future,
and residents come before you because they've had a water main break in front of their house and they get flooded, the council's going to give them anything they want, just like you guys did. I think that's the way it'll go. But we should constantly educate them about their homeowner's insurance, and they need to check to make sure that they are covered from what's called exterior water entering their home as opposed to interior water that's flooding their home. That's the most important thing in this whole discussion is so many homeowners insurance policies think that they're covered when they're really not. It's like in Houston, so many people were not covered against a flood. It was an external water that was coming and they thought they were covered. So every year, Cedar Hill should regularly tell the residents, go check with your homeowners and educate them on this process. But I'd be careful about how you draft legislation if you're going to be, because there's always unintended consequences. And if you try and be too cute with it, then it's going to come back and bite some future council, because you've said in legislation not to do this, yet they've got residents in front of them asking them to do something different, and they're going to do something different, I promise you.
Just 2 points I want to point on. I know it's been said before, is that we pay a premium to this insurance for city infrastructure. However, infrastructure that's excluded from that coverage is our pipes. There's not enough money that we have to pay for that. And if we did pay for that, it would be far and above beyond what we would like to be paying out for these types of claims throughout the year. That's why the cities don't insure the pipes. And, you know, hopefully we're always found to be not negligent in maintaining our systems. That's something that's very important to us, is the integrity of our system. When we find out errors, we seek to correct them. There is the possibility of redrafting this to be more in line with what we call a mention. The problem is it comes down to informing residents, because we only have so many vehicles to inform residents. We've kind of touched on wrong. We could do a story here.
But I'm less about rewriting the ordinance. More in favor of, I need more information to decide,
okay,
how competitive are we with private industry? If I go out right now and go look for a water company, how much does that cost me as a homeowner? How much is that compared to what we need to fund this properly? Are we funding it properly? I mean, I just need more information about how to discern between the choices I have.
I see what you're saying. And my point to that is not that we're funding it properly, we're funding something. And it's a shot in the dark. There are years that you go by, there's no place. There's no incident to happen. And there's years where there could be multiple instances. You just never know. And then as far as if we're competitive, depends on how the council wants to fund it, really. You know, because 1 year it could be an increase in utility fees versus a decrease in other services that the city provides, or a combination of both. And that can change year over year based on the palette of the council.
So Daniel, the way that I approach this, if I were you, is if you try to compare how we fund it to an insurance company, invariably I think that there's going to be some differences. So you start funding it, but think of it in terms of when someone buys a life insurance policy or any type of insurance policy, they buy it hoping to never have to use it, because if they're using it, it means something really bad has happened. So it's very possible that, you know, we start self-insuring and we don't use any of the money for a decade or longer.
And are we going to accumulate it?
Yes. In this case, if you're considering it as being self-insured and we go 5 years without any sort of claim against the city, that excess revenues and not expended funds go into the water sewer.
Right. So,
this is a premium that we get to keep.
I mean, the question here then is, if you look back over, or look forward, really, as we need to do, and estimate the claims that we're going to have, will it exceed $25,000 per year? Are we going to have more than one incident per year? Right. So if you just laid out, if we're going to limit ourselves to 25K per incident, How many incidents are we expecting over the next 20 years? We know.
That's up to the council to budget for. Because we had the issue in
Morgan.
We all know around there. But we had another issue with that same pipe in a different location later in the summer. And fortunately, no homes were damaged in that case. But it very well could have been a different scenario. We could have had additional residents maybe the council hasn't provided. So, you know, it's unknown. You just, I can't give you a number that says this is enough to, I can give you a number that says this is enough to cover, but then we're going to have some new residents under utility increase.
I don't think this is something that you can, that you can forecast.
Jeff, I can't.
I don't know if Jeff has done something where he's looked at the age of our pipes in various parts of the city and said, you know, I think we're going to start to have X many in the next 5 to 10 years.
We have looked at things like that. Most of our infrastructure is newer. We use PVC type materials that last for 50 years. Some of the older parts of town, we're seeing increased water burden. Water lines, so that's the old parts of town, local county land. And we're watching those, we're seeing those start to scale up, and as those happen, we're talking about replacing those pipes. And then when we become aware of a pipe that is problematic, i.e., this PI line that has now burst twice this year for various reasons, we're looking at, okay, what liability do we have on this line going forward? We may need to rebuild this entire line in some manner. Those are discussions that we can have on staff.
Well, and I would add to that, since I've been disabled for 6 years, this is the third instance that I can think of that we've had a resident come and ask for us to help them out with an issue. One of those was a sewer backup that was caused because some kids vandalized the sewer system. That's something we can't predict.
In that case, the city could very well say, you're not liable to sabotage, which would fall over that sort of sabotage. That may not even apply.
Right. But I agree with what Mayor Geeky said in that education is important, but the hard part of that is that we know that's a challenge in anything that we're trying to get out to residents, and we have people working in other communities, but we have people coming in all the time, so that's a continual education that's happening consistently because people are moving in all the time, moving out.
Yeah, and that's why I want the information handed to them when they sign.
Right. And so it's a continual education, but I agree that when you've got a resident right there in front of you whose home has been damaged from a sewer backup or a PI line or whatever the case is, they're expecting if it's our infrastructure that we're going to help in some fashion. And if we don't have some kind of a policy or some kind of a guideline, then the mayor's right. What we've ended up doing is just doing whatever they ask us to do. And that's hard to budget for, that's hard for staff to deal with. It's better to have a policy that we can follow and budget for.
One of the nice
things I really like about what Ben suggested, whether it's in the policy or not, I would love to treat this as a reimbursement for the deductible. And then we're advertised with this, look, we're gonna do our part, but it's because you're doing your part. You get yourself insured for this, and then you have deductible, we'll cover that.
This already covers that. And the exceptions, it says the loss is fully covered by private insurance. But the next provision says the state may pay at their discretion the deductible up to the level of private insurance. So there is a provision for that built in here.
That has a possibility of actually encouraging residents to get this kind of insurance.
I would agree because the policy limits that you said are not going to do a complete, especially if there's multiple homes affected, it's not going to benefit them if they don't also have insurance.
One of the nice things also about the policy, though, is that it's nice for you guys, for the council, is that it kind of makes staff the bad guys. Same for community one. It's staff that would administer the policy, and it would only go to the council above and beyond the staff. So staff saying, here's the policy that's been adopted, here's what we can do for you.
Have you talked to the insurance companies about whether this would enable residents to get a lower cost, higher deductible policy? In other words, if I know the city's going to kick in $5,000, can I then have a $5,000 deductible and that lowers my rates?
I don't know how to answer that question.
So, but that would only make sense if the damage to your home came because of something city insurance. extra. But something happens within your home and now you've got a high deductible, so he's not going to help you out. But
no, no, I mean, but only for that writer.
Oh, for a writer.
So Chandler and I are planning a town hall to talk about roads and pipes. So we'll probably have a good discussion on this, probably before the end of the year, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have that town hall meeting.
Okay.
Would, what we're doing is we're proposing to have the town hall in lieu of the work session at the same time, so it'll be 6 o'clock. We don't need to get here to be scheduled to be that to discuss roads and construction.
Okay, does anyone else have questions for Chandler? If not, if you're comfortable, make a motion.
Good. I'd like to make a motion to table it and wait for Chandler's addition to section about dedicated back to the city or whatever you call it.
The whole harmless.
Whole harmless, yeah. Or if you felt like that can be done.
Well, we required it. Approval. If we did in case of Morgan back up, but I mean, as part of the payment, we required that they sign a whole harmless. So it's been a de facto policy on the business.
So where you can do that.
Just refurbish.
So I'm going to ask you to narrow your motion. You said either or, and pick one of those sizes of fence and go.
So I'll make a motion that we adopt resolution 10-3-2017-8. I got it. Adopting the no fault culinary / PI water sanitary sewer and storm water. Sewer failure plans program subject to changes that mentioned about you adding the whole harmless paragraph and PI to anywhere it talked about just culinary water.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion? So vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being here tonight. And I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.
Good job, guys.